Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download at www.audibletrial.com/thedrilldown. Over 100,000 titles to choose from for your iPod and MP3 player.
There's so much that we need to share, so send a smile and show you care.
Hello and welcome to The Drill Down, the podcast where we take a look at some of the week's most important events in tech and on the web and how they affect us all. I'm Andy Sarcini.
I'm Dwayne DeFreitas.
And I'm Tosin Unafawakin.
As always, you can check out past episodes of The Drill Down, as well as the other fine shows in the Geeks of Doom podcast network on geeksofdoom.com. Subscribe to us on iTunes by going to geeksofdoom.com, and our subscription link is in the right-hand sidebar. And join us on Facebook and Twitter at The Drill Down. Our show is also on Stitcher at stitcher.com, and you can search for The Drill Down there. So we're going to do a little something different this week. This holiday season is coming up, and The Drill Down would like you to be ready for it. So as we do every year about this time, we've prepared a list of what we consider the perfect gifts to give and get this holiday. So before you stand around for hours this Black Friday, spend some time with us. We're going to go around the room taking turns telling you about items on our list, and these are in no particular order. So why don't we start with what have we got here? You, both of you guys, Dwayne and Tosin, you both have the Chromecast on your list.
Yeah, the Chromecast has been really an amazing device that came out this year from Google. And for those who may not have listened to any earlier episodes or followed the news here, it allows you to basically stream content from any sort of Chrome tab to your TV, as well as from applications such as Netflix. I believe it does Hulu as well. But so far, this little device is coming in at, I believe, at like $35, and it's just really amazing. I think it's kind of brought a new dimension to to streaming devices. To, you know, a lot of people are probably used to paying $100+ for Rokus, maybe even for Apple TVs. And for this really cheap device, you can take it anywhere and be able to stream all sorts of content and push it easily to your TV. So this was just something that I picked up as I have so many other devices that I stream with. I decided to pick this up to try it around in my apartment, and I use it so often. I really, really love it, and I'm quite glad and pleased with it. I think this fits the niche of the, you know, the technologist out there and those who are simply looking to push content to their TV. I don't know, Dwayne, you have anything to add?
Yeah, I mean, I initially got the Chromecast, and to be honest, I got turned off from a visual perspective because it required this cable that that is never on the commercials and never in the pictures.
It's the power cable, right?
It's the power cable. So even though HDMI feels like it could have power flowing through it, it doesn't. So the Chromecast has a mini USB connector, and it needs juice. It gets USB power from that juice. I spent $6 on a super short, a 6-inch USB cable that plugs into the USB power of my television and plugged it in, and I found that I was much happier with the Chromecast. But then again, I'm the guy who's got the cables like completely wound up super beautifully, so my girlfriend doesn't kill me when I want to add a new device to my situation. But that aside, the Chromecast is pretty sweet. It is not an Apple TV, but it definitely solves the AirPlay problem. And unlike an Apple TV, you don't need a Mac to shoot your screen over to the Chromecast. If you're running Windows, if you're running OS X, as long as you're running Chrome, you know, even if you're on your phone or whatever, you pass it through. Chromecast has also done something interesting where they've created basically a new AirPlay when it comes to your embedded devices like the iPad and the iPhone and Android devices. When you're in supported applications like Netflix, like YouTube, you simply let the Chromecast know by hitting the icon button. And the Chromecast, basically, I found it picks it up from there. The Netflix application itself becomes simply a remote while the stuff is displayed. And it's very unclear to me whether your phone is streaming it to the device or whether the Chromecast is going out to Netflix on its own. Because while the image is a little blurry at first, it gets real tight real quickly, which I cannot say for the Apple TV 3. When you do stream things, let's say from your Amazon movie player, video player, to your Apple TV, it's always got a little bit of that blur. It's always just got a little bit of that, I'm being streamed here. Or when you have your screen pop over, mm-hmm. It's almost like the Chromecast scheme is to tell, you're telling the Chromecast what it should show, and the Chromecast is going to go out and do the work. For $35, this is a great stocking stuffer for anyone that you plan on getting multiple gifts for. It's all you need in the stocking. You know, get yourself, you know, do yourself a favor and pick up that little tiny USB cable to go with it. But it's great. Tiny box, tiny device, big solution. Google's done a very good job here.
Let me ask you a question here. Like, when the Chromecast first launched, one of the issues that people had with it, one of the limitations was that it didn't have a broad amount of services connected with it at that time. Has that improved since then?
Absolutely. When I got the Chromecast, I got it, I don't know, the week it came out or whatever, through Amazon. And I was like, okay, what am I going to do with this? But now, there are a lot of things that it supports. When I first got it, I was even upset. I think I said this on the show, because it didn't support my Chromebook. I have a Samsung Chromebook, mm-hmm. an earlier version, and my Chromebook wasn't supported by the Chromecast. Now it all works. Another thing the Chromecast does that's pretty interesting is when you ask the Chromecast, when you ask your device to talk to the Chromecast is intelligent enough to take your television, and as if you have a Logitech Harmony, it switches the HDMI port from whatever's on to the Chromecast. It does it automatically. It does the same. And if I don't know, depending on what your speakers are set up, that'll happen too if they're coming out to the TV. So basically, the Chromecast is saying, "Hey TV, I'm going to actually give you some information through the HDMI port," and that's really, really neat because you don't have to worry about picking up your remote control, switching whatever. It just pulls it over. It's a sweet device for $35. Yeah,
that's pretty impressive. I love that. I just have my TV on and I'm on the couch reading an article and there's a video in YouTube and I just say, "Yep, let me just push it over to the Chromecast." And it changes the inputs and does all that, you know, all that heavy lifting for me. So love it. It's pretty awesome. And the other cool thing, which if you look, they have experimental mode where it's potentially the ability to stream your desktop and other sort of applications. So be on the lookout for further developments. The Chromecast is definitely here to stay.
Cool. I'm sold.
If we know Google at all, we know that Google's all about starting something small and then just growing the capabilities over and over and over again, is adding more to it. I don't know what the Chromecast hardware is capable of, but for what it's been doing, it's clearly impressive.
All right, you know, as you both of you know, and as the listeners of our show know, that this year there are two brand new next gen consoles that are out: the PlayStation 4 and the by the time you hear this podcast, the Xbox One will be just about to launch. And I'm going to break with conventional wisdom, and instead of suggesting which one of the next-gen consoles I think people should rush out and get this year, I'm going to recommend that that people wait and not buy either of the 2013 next-gen consoles and hold off on purchasing them. Wait, like, another 6 months. Wait another 6 months.
What? Andy, 6 months? This stuff just came out. People yes. are crazy for it. How can they wait 6 months?
Because they're just not ready for prime time. Their launch titles are not very impressive. The features themselves are they're about the same on either device, and both of them are lacking in some respect or another. Like, I was sold on getting the PS4 And then I learned that there is no DNLA support on it, and you can't use it as a set-top box outside of the apps that have been pre-approved by Sony for use with it, like you know, Netflix, etc. Like, you can't use it for your own media home media.
Yeah, I mean, I think that is a problem that it doesn't have that functionality. I think it's not unlike the Chromecast. There's a big yet attached to that. Yeah. I don't know if Sony would necessarily drop DLNA support, but I do know that for me, I look at these consoles, and if you know, most people are tied to an ecosystem, the Sony ecosystem, the Microsoft Xbox ecosystem. If you know you're tied to one of those and you're looking for a device that can get rid of a bunch of crap hanging out under your TV, I say look into these things.
Well, I don't know if that's necessarily the case because, and this comes back to some of the limitations, right? So I'm hoping everyone now really takes the mainstay of Blu-ray, but they're also, the one thing to note is that they, both consoles don't support DVDs. So if you're looking to get rid of a DVD player, that's not going to be the case. And also, backwards compatibility is not there, right, nor is an ecosystem to play your older games. So most likely, at least for the first 6 months, to tell you the truth, this may be an additional console that is in within your stack. But I think the big thing for me is really the lack of impressive titles. So there are titles which are out, which are visually impressive. Killzone, the new Killzone, is supposedly looks remarkable. But then when it comes to innovation in other areas, and as well as just a groundbreaking game, that's just not there yet. And I think a big portion of that really comes from often the rush to get out these titles in terms of the deadline, right? Everything was up to the wire, both for the console perspective as well as for game perspectives. I think on the Xbox One, when that launches, I think you may see something really cool with Forza, the racing game.
Oh yeah.
But and with some of the AI stuff that they're doing, some of the cloud stuff they're doing, funny enough. But I still think that it's going to be a while until you get that must-have title to pick up the purchase to replace any of your existing consoles. I was telling a few friends here, it's like, although I have no bearing to getting a new console because I don't play as many games and I've got lots of titles that I still haven't touched. For example, The Last of Us.
Yeah.
And I have all the streaming stuff I need, right? I want there to be a reason for me to get a new console. Like, I had that feeling this weekend where I was like, I want to be part of this excitement, but there's no real reason to do so. So I'm really hoping that I'm hoping things pick up in the upcoming months. And
By 6 months, should settle. The chip should settle down.
I think that if you're a person just getting into this space, you got a guy like John Carmack saying, dude, Sony made great engineering choices when it comes to this hardware.
Yeah, I hear the controller is amazing. Like,
the controller's amazing. It's the first thing with social features built right into it natively. So there's that. I mean, you guys are saying there's no backward compatibility with the games and so on. That isn't there right now. But Sony is basically saying that, you know, while they haven't completely confirmed it, they definitely haven't ruled out emulation. And cloud-based streaming. I mean, they bought Gaikai a while ago, and there's just nothing to say that won't be there. I think Sony is focused on a gaming machine for gamers, and I think that's a big piece of it. There's live broadcasting on this puppy, so you can take your games and show your friends. The classics like Hulu and Netflix are there. You know, if you've been, and I don't doubt that more services will show up. It's an early adopter piece for sure, no doubt. And for guys who are early adopters, you guys are beginning to sound like me when I eschew the new things until they get fully supported. But it sounds like this is at the heart of how you view your entertainment, which is why you're a little trepidatious about hopping in here. I don't know. I feel like the PS4 is attractive to me. You can get rid of your Blu-ray players. You can get rid of all this other stuff like that. It's got
and the controller is really something. So I dig it.
But it, another thing to keep in mind is sometime between now and the next 6 months, we'll get a clearer idea of what Valve is going to be offering with their Steam specs for the Steam Box, the Steam boxes that'll be available from third-party vendors, and the Steam boxes that you can build yourself based on their specs, and then just get the controllers. So there's a whole other sort of there's another player in the game that we have yet to see emerge.
But I think about Steam's box, and frankly, they may launch with more of a following than Nintendo Wii U.
Yes.
I mean, Steam's got a solid track record of moving away from just game. I mean, Valve has a solid track record of moving away from game creation and delivering that game content to computers all over the place. The idea of delivering that to a TV, boom. So there is a chance that that's gonna be there. I do think that these are ones to watch. If you've got somebody in your life who is an early adopter, you know, I take Tosin's point. Put this right, you know, if you really want to get them something special, get this right there. They'll put it next to their existing box.
Yeah.
It'll stick out. And over time, I'm definitely sure that these two companies who have their entire futures riding on this device, especially Sony, are going to make sure they're going to make the business deals to make these things happen. And there's a lot of great value there.
Sure. And so instead of like, I'm sorry, Tosin, what were you going to say?
No, go ahead.
So instead of recommending a next gen console, and I know we're going to talk about some games a little bit later, but what I'm going to recommend is GTA 5, which is currently available for, I think, both consoles. It's an incredible, fully immersive sandbox game where you can do just about everything, and the detail is just phenomenal. It's just phenomenal detail on every object in every a bit of the landscape. It's an incredible immersive environment. And, you know, my only qualms for GTA 5 is it's definitely not a game for kids, for children, because there's like hardcore violence, hardcore, profanity. And
not everything can be for the kids. In
fact,
like even now, the research just came out that ever since PG-13 movies came up, there's more violence in them than rated R movies now.
So even when
things are for the kids, they're not for the kids.
Yeah, yeah. You really, with GTA 5, you really have to be of a certain age to be able to process that that level of adult content and not have it, you know, psychologically affect you, because some hardcore stuff. There's hardcore torture, like human torture in that game. It's one of the controversial aspects of that game. But outside of that, if you can live with the, with all of that, it is an incredible immersive environment where you can do just about anything. It's multi games within a game, within one big game, and it's a lot of fun. It's about $60 and dropping, you know, month by month. So, but currently it's about $60, and I would say it's worth it for the gameplay, for the hours of gameplay that you get.
Right. Oh, yeah. One quick note on the PS3, PS4, and Xbox One. The reason why I think the PS4 is pretty exciting is because even though you can do this on the PS3, on the Xbox, you've got to pay to get any online services. And on the PS3, you can get PS4, you can get a lot of these online services, Netflix, Hulu, etc., without paying for the game network, which is a pretty great way to open up a box and get ready to go without having to spend any extra money.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. And both of these things are way cheaper than the last versions when they just came out.
Right. And if you do actually choose to rush out to buy a PlayStation 4 console, you may want to, there's a day one patch, which Sony was actually offering on their website, so you could download it on like a USB stick and plug it in. So you may also, if you're gifting it to someone or getting it for yourself, you may want to grab that patch and gift it as well so that they can immediately jump into the games as well.
Now, Dwayne, you and I both have some form of the iPad on our holiday list. You have the mini, I have the iPad, the new iPad Air.
Yeah, so, I mean, here's the thing. For me, when the iPad mini first came out in 2012, it was a lesser iPad. It was effectively an iPad 2 with a greater pixel density and a smaller form factor, which some people found attractive. Hey, you know, I got a fast processor, kind of, but mostly I got a I have an A5 processor, like the iPad 2. I've got slightly better pixel density, but it's not quite Retina. But it's smaller and lighter, and with most technology things, smaller and lighter means making some trade-offs. That is not the current iPad mini. The current iPad mini, the Retina iPad mini, shares the same display as the same display resolution as the iPad Air. It has the same processor. It has the same RAM. All it doesn't have is the same size. So if you're looking for something in that niche, like you've got an iPad already, maybe an iPad 3 or 4, or you don't have one at all and you're looking for something that's be a lot of fun, the iPad mini is pretty awesome. Great power, small size, you know, crystal clear and beautiful, and you know, you can get it for $300 if you want the base model. So yeah, I feel like that's a pretty tight all around tablet. And if you know, so that's why I throw it in there, because I am impressed by the iPad mini now, especially holding my iPad 3, 4.
It's great in that particular form factor. If you want that particular size, the iPad mini is ideal. I am going to say, if you're not an iPad owner yet, or if you haven't, or if you're an owner of like one of the first couple of generations of iPad, it's time to upgrade to the iPad Air. It's lighter, it's more powerful, it's sleeker, it's just all around, it's everything has been upgraded from top to bottom. Starts at about $500 and then up if you want to get Wi-Fi or,
3G and GPS.
Yeah, 3G and, yeah.
See, my only issue with the iPad Air
is
that because the iPad 3 and 4 were so heavy and so big, the iPad Air essentially feels like an iPad 2 when you pick it up. If you have an iPad 2 and you're not crazy that, you know, you're not crazy for like a Retina display, which, you know, my girlfriend has an iPad 2 and she's like, yeah, Retina, who cares? She's not moved. But when she picks up that mini, just as a smaller person with like less upper body strain, she's nuts about it. So yeah, the iPad, if you're looking for the bigger size, that's a good thing. I think the thing about the iPad is that a lot of people are saying, well, I mean, I have a laptop or I have a MacBook. I have a MacBook Air, which is a tiny device anyway with pretty much the same kind of screen. Why do I need an iPad? And I think that's where the iPad mini begins to hit home. I think the iPad Air is absolutely, you're absolutely right. It's a phenomenal device. It is slick as all hell. It's fast as all hell. You feel the snappiness. It feels faster than my iPhone 5S, and I guess that's because it is, because it's not under the clock like my phone is. But it's like a great multimedia experience. So I think it's totally worth it. If you're a person who likes the bigger form factor, so be it. Like, that's definitely the one to go. That's worth the $200 upgrade. Because you're getting more screen, you're getting more battery life, you're getting more of everything. So either one is really good. I do want to highlight, though, the new Kindle Fire as a device. If you're not an Apple person, and let's face it, the iPad, while it's like the number one selling tablet, there are plenty of people out there who are like, I'm not into Apple's ecosystem. I have an Android device. I want to use my Android apps on my tablet or whatever. The HDX is quite tight. Far different from the first Kindle Fire or the Kindle Fire HD, high quality, light as a feather, and with great display. I think it's got 1920 by 1080 display on a 7-inch device. So it's also Dynamate, and of course, basically what it does, unlike the iPad, which is kind of a standalone, almost computery thing, the HDX is literally the easiest way to get any content you got on Amazon onto a device right in front of your face. When Amazon comes out with a comic book store, I may have to switch over because you know they'll get all the comics. It's a pretty sweet thing. And if you're more into the dedicated reader, I don't know if you guys have played with the Paperwhite yet, but
Paperwhite was one of my choices on last year's holiday gift guide list. And since that broadcast, I purchased a Paperwhite. It's really sharp, really easy to read, light, super light. It's a perfect reader. And the new Paperwhites they have out, they've improved the optic quality, the optical readability on the devices. So it's even better.
Right, that's the one I have in my house. Picked it up for my girlfriend for our anniversary, and I gotta say, I got this for her, and I was instantly jealous. but why do you need a Kindle like reading device if you've got a tablet? I'll tell you why. You don't need one necessarily, but if you're a person who really loves reading and you're reading on an iPad like I do, we had this conversation about push notifications before we started recording.
Ugh.
But I like getting immersed in what I'm reading.
Yeah,
a lot. So I tend to put the iPad into do not disturb mode and then I hop into reading. Kindle is even better than that. The battery life is better. I mean, the iPad gets great battery life at 10 hours, but the Kindle, you're getting like a month. You can turn off the backlight completely and get like a month of battery life.
Yeah.
When it's darker, you want to have that light come back up. There you go. You don't get distracted, and that's key, right?
Yep. 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 Plus it's thin, light. All it does is books. So.
Exactly. We talk about this idea of the true upgrade, whether it's the Pebble stuff, the PS4. The Kindle is an upgrade to the paper book. And a lot of people are like, no, I like the paper. I like the way it feels. I'm just saying in terms of you can have as many books as you want on it.
Yeah.
It's as light as a book. You don't have to worry about charging it for quite some time. You're surprised when you have to charge it. Oh, of course. Yeah, no problem. And you're not sacrificing anything from the book experience except for the feeling of a dead tree between your fingers. So it's I think it's all in all like a very, very tight device.
$119.
Yeah, and that's the one with the 119 gets you the one with like special offers. Yeah. Which at first I was like, who needs that? Whatever. But part of Amazon is understanding what you bought and understanding what you may want from that. And so the special offer version that I did pick up for my girlfriend, at first I was like, man, I'm cheap. I didn't even go with the big one. But I think she actually prefers it because when she's ready to read something, she's like, oh, that might be interesting. And a lot of times they're like, oh, look, by the way, these books are 99 cents or these books are free.
Yep.
And you're getting access to that content for money that you're just willing to spend.
They do good recommends. So a lot of the special offers come with samples, so you can sample, the first chapter or so for free. I don't mind the special offers at all.
Bottom line is, if you like the current iPads are a step above, in a big way, the last several versions, right? iPad mini is now as good as the flagship iPad.
Yeah.
The iPad Air gets away from some of the problems of the iPads 3 and 4. If you're not into the Apple stuff, the Kindle Fire HDX is a pretty good device for $229. I mean, you're getting a lot of computer for $229. Now you put that on top of the Paperwhite for $119. Again, you're getting some good stuff. So there's a tablet for everybody, and if there's someone special in your life that you want to drop some Boku dollars for, these are great ones.
Yep. Netflix. You've got Netflix on your list. That's a no-brainer.
I think if you want to hook somebody up with the gift of entertainment, Netflix costs about $8 a month for the streaming only option. The idea that you'll spend, not a lot of money to get them basically a gift certificate, that's not bad, $96. That's a good price for the gift of unlimited entertainment all year long. It's a no brainer. You're right. It's a complete no brainer. So if you like the idea of hooking your friend up with something that's, not going to collect dust, not going to do whatever, especially like your parents, because a lot of parents are sort of like, this idea of Netflix sounds cool, but how am I going to whatever? It's pretty tight that you can do this, that you can just kind of pass them along. Every single device they own plays Netflix. If they've got a TV in the last 5 years, that probably plays Netflix. So
it's not a current gen device if it doesn't play Netflix, right?
Almost, yeah. I mean, Netflix's strength is that.
I think I heard somewhere that you shouldn't consider something a device unless it plays both Netflix and Angry Birds.
That is a mark of our time, absolutely. If you've got an internet-connected device and it can't play Netflix or Angry Birds, that's an issue. But yeah, so this isn't in the province of geeks anymore. Netflix is completely mainstream. It's phenomenal. And, now that they have their own series and everything, this is the kind of stuff that I think, for me, my mom and I will be like, oh my God, Downton Abbey, what happened? Oh my God, House of Cards, what happened? And I'm, as a person who's a cord cutter, I'm finally able to share some of that content with her. So
yeah, great. That I'm glad that you mentioned that, because we should outline that it's not just you know, a great place to rent movies and watch old TV shows, but now they're creators of this amazing content like House of Cards and Orange is the New Black, and more stuff coming up in the next few years. That the new Marvel series, we're gonna have a whole new series of Marvel characters on Netflix. It's exclusive to Netflix. So, and for $7.99 a month, that is you can't beat that deal.
I know. It's like having a whole bunch of cable channels and having it on every device. It's pretty tight. So yeah, not that we want to be a commercial for Netflix,
no,
but hey,
no,
that's what's happening, no, and I'm okay with that.
Speaking of commercials, let's take a moment to talk about our actual sponsor, Audible.com. The world's leading provider of digital spoken word entertainment on the internet. For the listeners of the Drill Down podcast, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you a chance to check out their service. And the Audible book I'd like to highlight this week is Catching Fire, which is, of course, the second book in the popular Hunger Games series by Suzanne Collins. This book is not only appropriate because there's a movie adaptation coming out that will have come out by the time you hear this podcast, but it is my personal favorite in the trilogy, in the Hunger Games trilogy. You know, Suzanne Collins sort of introduced this world. She built the world in book one, and then she took the rules of the world and just ramped it up to the extreme in book two. Book two is just off the rails, like batshit insane, a exponential leap compared to book one.
I feel like book two is very much the Empire Strikes Back,
yes,
to A New Hope, right? Like,
it's a great analogy.
You've been established with the universe and how kind of wacky and kooky and creepy it is.
Yeah.
And now she's able to take the characters further. She's able to take the story further because she doesn't have to explain the narrative. The same thing happens with The Lord of the Rings and The Two Towers. They explain the Shire and everybody who's involved in the very first book, The Fellowship of the Rings. But when you get to The Two Towers, you're like, okay, now that it's all here, what are we going to do? And I think Catching Fire successfully brings that about.
Yeah. I can't say that I'm as big a fan as the third one, Mockingjay. It kind of peaked at Catching Fire for me. So, but that's our recommendation for this week. To download that free audiobook, go to audibletrial.com/thedrilldown. Again, that's audibletrial.com/thedrilldown for that free audiobook and the 30-day trial to check out their service. We're going to take a little break here, listen to some music, and when we return, more games and big kid toys for the holidays. So take a listen to this and come on back. If you're just joining us, you're listening to the Drill Down on Geeks of Doom, the roundtable podcast where we take a look at the best in tech and on the web and how it affects us. I'm here with Duane DeFreitas and Tosin Adafuaken, and we're doing our holiday gift guide where we are giving our listeners the best sort of information as to what gifts to give and get this holiday season. Let's talk about games. So we all have some games on our list. I have games specifically for the iPad. But let's start, Tosin, with some of the games that you have. You've got Tomb Raider and Rocksmith. I'm familiar with Tomb Raider. I don't know what Rocksmith is.
Yeah, well, we'll start with Tomb Raider. All so right. This is a new title by Square Enix. I believe it came out earlier this year. And it didn't sell too well, unfortunately, but it is a title which I think currently retails for, I think you can find it for $20 to maybe $30, mm-hmm. and that's on PC, Xbox 360 as well as PlayStation 3. It does look like it's also going to be coming to Mac fairly soon. But this is kind of an origin story for Lara Croft and the Tomb Raider series. And really, and this game itself is unlike the other Tomb Raider games that I played in the past. This one really has heart and grit. It really shows the development of Lara Croft into the person that she becomes. And it's just, this game is just so well made. For one, it's really beautiful to see. Seriously, if you have like a PC or a machine that is really powerful and you can crank up the graphics on it, it just looks amazing. If you search the internet for just screenshots of the detail in the game and the environments, it's just a wonderful thing to look at. The gameplay itself is really fun. It has elements of stealth that you can put in place, but it just also has elements of what I'll call badassery, where you just run out and you're just, or you take cover, of course, but you're going out and you are taking people down left and right, and then at the end of a lot of these like elements, like Lara Croft will yell out, he's like, "I'm coming for you!" Like, it's just like you definitely feel pumped to be this. To be this heroine. And it's really cool because you don't get very many games where you get to play as a heroine and really see this development from someone who's really weak initially and then becomes strengthened and empowered through her journey. It's just an excellent game, probably one of my most favorite games of the year.
Really?
And this comes from someone who doesn't really take the time to play many games, and I'm still playing through this. There's still quite a lot of content in here.
Yeah.
And I will definitely finish it because it's just so much fun. And that's really what it boils down to. I would highly recommend that you get to try it out. It is kind of bloody and gruesome in the in the things that happen when the game first starts off. She like falls on a nail and it just like gets all bruised and makes you like squirm in your chair being like, that's really painful.
I know, but this seems like an unfair comparison, but I have to ask you, how do you feel like this would compare to the Uncharted series?
So it's an interesting thing to have to compare this game to that, because right, there's a lot of elements, but if you really think about it, a lot of the Uncharted series took elements from the original Tomb Raider,
right?
They actually based themselves from it. So I think on one hand, you'll notice a lot of those elements, but there's also a good deal. There's some quick time events, which you get in some of the series, but I think this fits its own niche. I feel like in the Uncharted series, you could be a little bit more run and gun. And in the particular Uncharted series, there's a lot more humor behind it. And this is really, there's more of a mystery of the tombs and more of a compelling, I think this is a pretty compelling story to uncover along the way. And just, it's remarkable. I would definitely recommend trying it out. In terms of the other title,
yeah,
Rocksmith was just a title I absentmindedly picked up, and it is a game that's available for all consoles, all previous consoles, so not available for next gen. So what Rocksmith is it's actually a game that allows you to plug a real guitar into your console or PC and kind of learn how to play guitar and play on various songs. So in terms of how much it costs, I think right now it's probably around $60 for just the game, and can go up to $200 depending if you're getting it with a actual guitar contained. If you already have a guitar, you can pick it up for, I think, about $70 to $80 with a converter cable. But so at first when I was really exploring this title or thinking more in depth in, you know, how I actually felt about it, I was actually really nervous because I don't know if you guys know, but I play guitar, and I've played guitar for a few years now. I wouldn't call myself fluent in it. I would say I'm still quite a novice, but for me, learning new guitar songs is really about just looking at the tabs and practicing over and over again until I, you know, nail them appropriately. So it's not something that's been difficult for me to pick up. And I wasn't sure if, you know, getting a game title, I wasn't sure if the game would actually be something that would be useful or would even be compelling. But I'll have to say that, you know, for those who are interested in learning how to play guitar from all levels of experience, it's really great and very quality. One of the things which I found really beneficial from it is the game is broken down into several different stages. For one, you get to choose your sort of campaign path if you are going to be trying to learn as like a lead or more like a rhythm back-end guitarist. And the game actually kind of learns based off of how you are performing. So the simple thing is just playing songs and trying to perfect them, but they also give you really further in-depth elements to it. So I can use this concept called the Rift Repeater, and I could play different sections of those songs over and over again to improve, as well as I can put auto leveling, so each time I get better at that section, it will increase the difficulty until I've mastered the full comprehension of that section to the full level of the song. And what I think I'm really impressed with this game is the ability, so for someone like me who's not a complete novice, the ability to be really fun and give me the ability to play with all sorts of other instruments and kind of play that song as though I am playing with the band. Because otherwise, the way which I would play with songs, you know, now that I live in California and away from my friend who I used to play guitar with all the time, the way I'd play with songs is playing the recording and just using that as background as I also play that song. Meaning that by the time I was able to get to that degree, the degree that I could play with a song, A, I would have to be in the exact same tuning, and B, I would have to master it so that I could play at the same pace and speed that they're playing those songs, which is, it's one thing to learn how to play a song, and it's another thing to play it at the speed that it was recorded at. So that made it, you know, literally you'd have to perfect it before you could even get that sort of rock band experience. And now I have it from various levels, and I can iterate and become better, as well as there's other tools in the assets. There's a whole arcade with lots of different mini games that you can play to get better at guitar. For example, trying to switch chords, which is, I believe it's a it's like a Western. By switching chords, you get to fight different guys who are coming in down the different chords. Just all sorts of little skills. There's even like a free play section where you just jam out and you get to pick different instruments like a kazoo or different types of drums as your background, and they just play filler while you filler to whatever tempo and whatever chord pattern you choose to pick. So ultimately, it's a really fun, compelling experience from all levels of guitar players, and kind of something I'd recommend if you're at all interested in trying to learn the craft and just wanting to get a little bit more out of your existing, you know, console or computer, or, you know, it's very awesome. I would, both those titles are things that, you know, I will constantly return to and are fun assets.
Cool. So you can actually learn a little bit of guitar using this if you're a novice or a beginner.
Yeah, you can actually learn a lot of guitar. So, for example, they actually have this website dedicated to the 60-day challenge, which is you play this game an hour a day for 60 days. And wow, you should see how good a lot of people have gotten. Like, even my skill level, I've learned quite a lot of different things that I never knew. Different,
sounds like Couch to 5K for music.
Yeah, it's amazing. Yeah, I would definitely look at it that way. And also, what's actually kind of cool, secretly kind of cool, is for one, it does built-in tuning, right? So there's a song by Weezer called "Say It Ain't So"
that I love. Yep,
that's like one of my favorite songs.
It's got a great guitar riff at the beginning too.
What did you say?
It's got that great guitar intro in the beginning.
Yeah, and I always would. It's one of those songs where I never learned it before because it was a different tuning, and it wasn't like a drop D tuning where I'd just change one string a level. I'd have to change all strings a level, all my strings, drop them down, I think it's a half step. before I could play that song. And for me, it was just a pain because that was the only song in my repertoire that was the only song which I wanted to have in my repertoire, which was that tuning. So I would literally just change for that song and then I'd have to change all the way back. Now with this game, it's built in with it has built in tuning, right? That you just hit, that it makes it so easy, so simple to tune for songs, and it prompts it when it knows that you need to change your tuning. Mm-hmm. And so I can just do this on a fly. Plus, I can actually play Say It Ain't So, not to the full level. I haven't mastered it yet, but I've leveled up that I'm, 50% of the way there, right? Each time I play it a little further, I add more chords. It ratchets up the difficulty until I can play it on my own. And so I think I just love that fact that now I'm like, I kind of want to drop the podcast right now and pick up the guitar and play.
Well, give us a few more minutes here, and then we'll let you go.
Wow, I've never heard Tosin so passionate about anything.
Yeah, no, it's shocked me. It was literally one of those titles that I read the reviews. I wasn't sure if it was something that I really wanted to drop money on, given my ability to learn songs already, and I'm really glad I did.
Well, I can't say that I can be as effusive as you were about the three iPad picks that I have, but I will say that amongst the iPad games that I've bought, these are some of the most impressive that I've got this year, that premiered this year. The first is Device 6, and Device 6 is an interesting, it's like an interactive book. It's an interactive book. But it's more than a book. It like keeps you active. It you have to keep rotating the device and moving things around on the screen as you're reading the narrative to advance the story, to unlock certain puzzles. And it's got a very interesting sort of handmade, feel to it, Device 6 and, let me see, Device 6. These are all relatively inexpensive, as most iPad apps are. Device 6 is retailing here for $3.99. So $4 for a story that like breaks convention with typical books and typical interactive fiction. The next one I have here is Haunting Melissa. Now, Haunting Melissa is not so much an app as it is it's a horror. It's horror fiction, but serialized. So you get like a chapter every week, or a chapter periodically. They're gonna be releasing chapters throughout. And it's kind of got this sort of Paranormal Activity feel, but it's all done through the iPad app. So it's a serialized horror story in the form of an iPad app. You watch the first episode for free, and then you pay for these subsequent chapters. It's got that Paranormal Activity feel, and it's and you can actually they have like a lot of sort of social interaction in the game, where the characters in the game have their own Twitter accounts and you can interact with them, and you develop a sort of a fan, this fan following around this story, where you can, in a forum mode, you can ask questions that are unanswered from this story and sort of crack the mystery behind this story, amongst the users, amongst yourselves in a forum sort of mode. And the last one I want to talk about is called Fetch, A Boy and His Dog. This is it's basically a kid's game, but it's the artwork on this is so amazing and so sort of graphically appealing. It's got sort of like a simple graphic appeal to it. It's a basic point and click adventure. You are a boy who owns a dog named Bear, and the dog, you live in this sort of post-apocalyptic world that has been taken over by this oppressive company, and the company has this secret anti-dog agenda, and your dog is kidnapped by this company for what reason, we're not entirely sure at this point. You find out as you play the game. And so because he's your dog and you love him, you have to go after him. You pursue him into the sewers that are run by this oppressive company that has taken over every aspect of civilization. And so it's a very cool point and click adventure. It's got an incredible amount of interactivity. Like all of the backgrounds, there's little things to point and click, little achievements that you can get just by pointing and clicking in the right places as well. And it's fun. It's only like, again, these are under $5 each. Fetch a Boy and His Dog is it's free, but to unlock the whole game, you have it's a 99-cent unlock. So there you go. Can't beat that. And those are my and I chose iPad games to talk about specifically because we were talking about the iPad and the iPad Mini and the iPad Air earlier. So those are fitting games to go with it.
Talking about movies and sort of entertainment, this is more on the cheaper side of things that you could buy. I know a lot of the things that we may have covered, apart from some of the games, you know, may have been, or at least that I've covered, were more on the expensive side, is the TV show Archer. And Archer is about this international spy slash interesting unique character played by John H. Benjamin.
Yeah.
And it's just a hilarious show. It is available on Netflix, but it's definitely something that would be a great stocking stuffer for people. It's really an easy show to return to. Very comical. It shows airs, I believe, on FX.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, I think, in terms of quality editing, it's really on the top there in terms of how the people behind the series were able to make quick cuts and still have this really progressive progressive storyline. I believe it's also made by people who made the show C-Lab 2021.
Oh, yeah.
You'll also notice that some of the characters are also kind of reminiscent of people from There's Always Money in the Banana Stand.
Yeah. Arrested Development.
Arrested Development, yes. The mother in there is the same character,
uh-huh,
and has the same sort of mannerisms. And in the same line with Archer, there's also this book that they released, which is called How to Archer, The Ultimate Guide to Espionage and Style and Women and Also Cocktails Ever Written.
Tosin.
And, yes?
How to Archer was one of your picks last year for the holiday gift guide.
That is amazing that it's returned as well too.
Wow.
Because and you know what's actually really funny about it? Because that book has been one that's been lent to so many people uh-huh in the office. And funny enough, today was the day it arrived back on my desk. It's been literally, I think it must have been a full year since I've last had that book in my possession, because someone would borrow it, someone else would see that they'd borrowed it, would want to read it, and then it would never come back. So maybe it's time to pick up another copy of that book because it is just hilarious in the same vein as Archer.
Okay, so spinning off of that, one of the things I'd like to recommend media-wise is the Breaking Bad complete series on Blu-ray. So Breaking Bad, phenomenal series. Some people say this is one of the best series in television history. Jury's still out on that one. I think history will be the final arbiter of that. However, it is one of my favorite series ever. An intense look for those of you who haven't seen Breaking Bad, and I don't know who at this point has not seen Breaking Bad, but it's the evolution.
Oh, wait, are spoilers going to happen?
No spoilers.
Only in season two.
No spoilers. Yeah. It's basically,
I have not finished it either.
Yeah.
It's basically the evolution of how a mild-mannered science teacher who discovers that he's terminally ill goes from that to being a drug kingpin, a meth cooking kingpin. It's you're following the evolution of that character, and it's just an amazing journey from start to finish. A box set comes in its own, like a chemical barrel that you would find that you would get meth making chemicals out of. And it there's an alternate ending that has emerged over the last week, and we're going to make that our drill down video of the week. And that is one that is absolutely worth seeing because it's one that all the fans have talked about. I don't want to spoil it or anything. But if you, even if after you've seen the entire series and are satisfied with the ending that was there, this is really the ending that people were talking about should be the appropriate ending for this series. In light of
who filmed this alternative ending? Was it the producers of the show, or is it fan made?
I think it was the producers of the show because Bryan Cranston is in it, I don't want to say anything if you haven't seen it, but Bryan Cranston is in it. It is a new bit of material, and anyone who is familiar with Bryan Cranston's work really wanted to see this ending in Breaking Bad. Okay, so let me move on from that to one of the last big ticket. This is a big ticket item on my list, and it is the Olympus OMD EM1 camera. It retails for $13.99, and that's the body only, not including the lens. It is a mirrorless 4/3 aspect ratio camera. And I have the OMD EM5, which is the previous model. The EM1's the new model that just came out. I'm entirely happy with my EM5 over the last few months that I've owned it. For those who are not familiar with the Micro Four Thirds format, it's basically a smaller size format than the full size APC sensor that is on the Canon or the Nikon cameras. But the advantage is with the Olympus, because it's mirrorless, it doesn't have that mirror reflex in it, and the sensor size is slightly smaller. It's Micro Four Thirds. The whole body can be a lot smaller and more compact than Canon's or Nikon's, so it's easier to carry. You can take it in more places. You don't have to lug around the same amount of lenses, or the same, not the same amount, but the lenses are smaller as well. This particular model, the EM1, got a 86% on DP review, digital photography review, which is considered one of their gold standard recommendations. They say that the differences between this and full-size APC sensors are negligible and only really discernible if you are scrutinizing the photos very closely and blown up, essentially. Other than that, the differences are negligible, and at that price, $13.99, and at that size, at that form factor, it just makes it worth it to carry around a lot lighter camera. It's more portable. This camera also does built-in HDR processing and built-in time lapse, and it's got Wi-Fi built in as well, so that you can auto stream the photos to your smartphone. So there you go, Olympus OMD EM1. Anything else? Is that our entire list?
I think we've spent everybody's money.
Yeah, we did. Well, I mean, if you got another $300 to blow.
It's a bad economy. Let's focus.
Yes.
Having a list that actually ends is the key to having a good list.
Yes. Yes. So that is our holiday list, the Drill Down's holiday list.
Wait. There's one last thing that we failed to mention, and that, or at least that I failed to mention, that is actually relatively high on my list, and that's the Arduino. So are you guys familiar with the Arduino?
I know Arduino is a programming platform. I don't know as a device itself or as a.
It's like a device standard, isn't it?
Yeah. So the the Arduino is a platform, but you can also get specific boards. In particular, the one a lot of people are getting these days is just the Arduino Uno, which is like an R3 board. A really small board, I'd probably say it's the size of half a pencil or so. And it's the great thing with the Arduino is it allows people to experiment with both programming but also with circuitry. And I think the reason which I'm adding this electronic in there is it's a kind of a good starter for people of all ages, really, who are kind of interested in both, you know, building things and learning how programming works.
Mm-hmm.
Primarily the Uno board, I think on its own is around $22, plus a lot of the other features that you build on top. Ultimately, you could end up spending, you know, $100 to $200 for all the features that you'd like, for all the various parts, all the various lights and things that you may need. But it's a real cheap way to start that sort of development needs. And there's a lot of really awesome things that people have been able to do with it. I made an Arduino project which actually uses two Arduino boards, uses Wi-Fi communication between the boards, and uses motion sensors to detect whether or not someone was in a room at all. So that's just kind of – and that was a really simple project. But I learned a lot of really cool and critical things throughout the process. And for someone who hasn't done any EE in a very, very long time, it was really cool to kind of get back on that hands-on perspective. I also was reading some other really cool things that people have done. For example, if you guys remember the Teddy Ruxpin bear.
Teddy Ruxpin, sure, yeah.
Yep. The bear that would talk and also the eyes would move at the same time. Someone had made the Bearduino where they took out the insides, connected it to a Arduino board, used an additional speaker shield, and now was able to get whenever Teddy would try and talk, it would be actual like audio that they'd have from the computer where it actually moved the mouth and eyes respectively, as well as other really cool things. So I think it's kind of a fun toy to have for those who are just kind of interested in that sort of area, and it's a great learning tool.
Wow, that's awesome. I've heard a lot of
price point of $22 is definitely a good stocking stuffer. You can always start somebody off and then they can take it and run with it with their own budget. So that's
No, it's great. I think I think the starter kit is one of the starter kits is around, I think, $40, and comes with, you know, a breadboard, the wires which you need, a couple buttons to play around with. I think that's where I would start off, and then, you know, also supply like a simple programming book for $10.
Cool. So Arduino, that's a great, and you can do lots of. It's like this jumping off point for tons of DIY projects.
Yeah, it's awesome. We keep having more and more ideas. So, I started off with that small price point and then spent like $100 more. So,
all right. Yeah. Well, let's wrap it up here. Let's go around the table here, and I'll start with you, Dwayne. Where can we find you, Dwayne, when you're not here on the Drill Down?
You can always find me on Twitter, twitter.com/DwayneD. You can always find me on flavors.me/DwayneD. You can see everything I'm doing.
And Tosin, how about yourself? Where can we find your work on the internet when you're not here on the show?
You can find me at twitter.com/toast4321. And you can also find other ramblings at ircwebcast.blogspot.com.
As for myself, you can find me at Mr. Baby Man. Just do a web search for Mr. Baby Man, my social network name, and you'll find all my work there, plus twitter.com and facebook.com at Mr. Baby Man. You can, if you got an idea for a story you think we should be talking about on the Drill Down, tweet us or email us at comments@thedrilldown.com. If you got a viewpoint on any of the stories we've talked about, or any issue that pertains to technology, social media, or geek culture, send that story to submissions@thedrilldown.com for us to publish on the site. We keep getting submissions like weekly and publishing them. There's like new stories up on The Drill Down every week. Let The Drill Down podcast help you reach the targeted tech-savvy market of influencers and outliers that is our amazing audience by writing to us at sales@thedrilldown.com for details. And be sure to catch us next week at the same time and location. And that's it for this episode of The Drill Down. Thanks for joining us, and have a happy holiday shopping season.
Happy holidays. Also have a happy holiday season, even if you don't shop. Somebody's home.